We are. Hour number three, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Congratulations, Greg Anderson. Greg was the first to call in and tell Elijah that it was Colt Sissons that celebrated his 400th career NHL game on Saturday night and the Predators win over Montreal. Colton Sissons is who we were looking for, and because of that correct answer, Greg will be headed to WWE Friday Night SmackDown. Two tickets to that. You can't even buy those tickets yet at Bridgestone Arena on January 21st. Let's bring in Tim Hasselbeck, who joins us, our NFL expert slash analyst. He now joins us. What did you make of the questions from Poyer and Hyde last night that they got up and eventually, they didn't get up and walk out on. They just at the end said peace out, and then Hyde made some comments to the guy who asked the question, which we're still trying to figure out who it was. What did you make of the post-game presser?
Well, I will say this. I think the way the question, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, I think the way the question was asked was, you know, how embarrassing was it to not be able to stop the run like that?
Yeah.
Like something to that effect, right?
Yep.
Like how embarrassing was it?
Yep.
Like, that's not the right way to ask the question.
Yep. 100%. 100%.
So,
agree.
You know, like if you're not going to ask the question the right way, then you should, you know, you're not always going to get an answer that, you know, but whoever's answering the question may help you out a little bit. And having, I guess, been on both sides of it, look, I would hope that if I ask a question the wrong way to somebody that, you know, they bail me out with their answer or they just accommodate in the right way. But if you're asking the question to somebody that just played in awful conditions, they lost a tough game, it didn't go great, then you probably should expect them to be a little hesitant to, like, accommodate you with, you know, cleaning up your question. So I typically would expect players to have some kind of class and grace, you know, when they answer questions. That being said, I actually don't really have an issue with most of the response, I should say.
I actually think they get an A for how they handled it. It could have gone really sideways, and you're right, you can't use that word. So with that being said, Tim, how embarrassing was that loss last night for the Bills?
Well, considering I got to be in my house with a fire on watching it, I'm not nearly as annoyed as those guys were. Okay. Yeah, like you never want, like when it's predictable and people are able to do it, it's in some ways it's why coaches get so upset when a team is able to close out a game, you know, holding possession on a drive when everyone knows they're going to run it type of thing. Like it's demoralizing. There's no doubt about it. I don't know if embarrassed is the word, but I don't think there's any question that it's demoralizing. And so because of that, I think it's something that could end up lingering and being an issue.
I've been saying for weeks, because we do our top 10 every week, and we'll put out our new top 10 going into week 14 tomorrow. I've said, you know, something's just off with this Buffalo team. They're paper champions, and they look good on paper. And now, Tre'Davious White is now lost for the season. That's not good. That was going back to the Thanksgiving night game. So this is the first game without him in the fold. But there's just something not right about this team. They, you know, they're very talented. They can't run the football. So you heard me say this many, many times last year about that Pittsburgh team that started off 11-0. They cannot run the football, and it eventually bit them in the butt. Why is it going to be any different for Buffalo?
Well, the difference, the reason it could be different for Buffalo than it was for Pittsburgh a year ago is that, you know, Buffalo has, you know, their version of Ben Roethlisberger in his prime and Josh Allen. I mean, like, that's why it could be different. But look, I would agree with you. Josh Allen was their leading rusher last night. That shouldn't happen. I really think that, and this was an issue, I guess it would have been a couple weeks ago. It's probably a better way to explain it. A couple weeks ago, Sean McDermott, in his kind of midweek press conference, was talking about how, he knew not being able to run the football was an issue. They wanted to make a commitment to it, and he sounded frustrated with his players that there wasn't kind of more of a buy-in and better execution of it. Now, I don't think it can be all put on the players, but yeah, being one-dimensional is a problem, no matter how good your quarterback is. And then, especially when you play in Buffalo, or could be playing postseason games in Kansas City or Baltimore or New England or any of those places where weather could be a significant factor, yeah, you need to be able to situationally, you know, have that be an element that could carry your football team. And they don't. So, like, in the sense of it being different, it's not concept-wise, Theron, but I just think that the reason that you could potentially get away with it is the quarterback being so talented.
So outside of the Patriots and the Chiefs, because now it seems like they're the front runners in the AFC, and we'll see how this all shakes out now that the Titans have had a little bit of a break and be able to try to get some of these players back. So for the sake of this discussion, let's just use the Patriots and Chiefs, and then let's use the rest of the pack, including the Titans. What does the rest of the AFC, how does it change? The Ravens have yet again lost another player for the season. Marlon Humphreys is done. I think that's 8 starters for the season, so they're not coming back. So you do have to factor that in. Like, when is that going to catch up to them? How do you see the rest of the AFC, the lay of the land, outside of those two teams at the top?
Well, I think that, you know, Baltimore is still, I get the injuries and the playing of a lot of, you know, guys that they were not counting on. And the quarterback has struggled. People have come after them. At the same time, like, okay, as poorly as things went the other night, not that it was a great throw. I actually thought Mark Andrews should have caught that pass, and all of a sudden they score a 2-point play and they win a division game on the road against a good defense. Like, you know, the narrative would be very different.
So you think that was more on him? That's a different take. So you think it's more on the tight end than the quarterback?
No, I think he could have given him a better throw.
Okay.
But I think Mark Andrews should make that play.
Okay.
So here's what I'm saying. I'm definitely not of the, hey, stick a fork in Baltimore scenario. I am not. I think Baltimore is talented enough to go win in New England, go win in Kansas City. And so if you're asking, like, how does it shake out, I think they win that division, and I think they're dangerous for whoever they play in the postseason. In terms of, you know, other teams that are a factor, I think Indy's a factor. I think they're a factor to win the division, not just a factor. Because, like, all the things that we were just critical of Buffalo, like, look, they run the football. They, you know, are a relatively healthy football team. They're not turning it over. I think they're, you know, they're somebody that can't be written off. And I think the Chargers in a very interesting way. They've lost, you know, they've lost some close games. They've had some bad luck. They have a really talented quarterback. I think they have other talented players. And so, you know, they're a team that, you know, I would not put them in the same class as Indy or Baltimore, just like I wouldn't put Cincinnati. But, you know, I think those are teams that still end up being a factor.
Talking to Tim Hasselbeck, and Tim, in the grand scheme of the game plan all coming together for Bill Belichick, it was astounding that a team could win a game in this era throwing the ball 3 times. So I want to ask you, I just looked at ESPN. They were kicking around. I couldn't hear the discussion, but they put up there that they used 6 offensive linemen 61% of the time. But the Bills would argue and say, okay, it was 222 yards, but 60-whatever were on one run. But they did chew up the clock and take valuable time away from the Bills and control the game with the run. So just how do you do that? And, like, why couldn't the Bills stop them?
Well, listen, I don't know why they couldn't stop them, because, you know, it was a lot of the same runs. You mentioned the personnel grouping. I think when, you know, you bring in another offensive lineman, I mean, teams bring an extra offensive lineman in to kind of be a pseudo tight end, and we'll throw the football at times, you know, not necessarily having that guy be a primary receiver, but as a tendency breaker or things like that. You know, this was obviously different. You know, at some point you say, like, this feels like, you know, death by paper cut. Like, let's do something here. Like, let's beg them to complete a pass in these conditions. And, look, I think there was an element of probably not committing to that enough. And then look, people are getting movement. Like, look at some of the runs, and, like, guys are just getting movement, getting pushed around. And so, like, why couldn't they stop them? Like, it sounds so crazy, but, you know, this idea of, like, hey, this is still a blocking and tackling game. It is, right? Like, you can be good with okay skill position players, but a really good offensive line offensively. But you can't be good with a bad offensive line and amazing skill position players. Hmm. And so, you know, New England was just better than them up front, and I think getting movement was enough.
I'm really curious, just like, boy, you really got me thinking with that question there. But you were talking about Indy as well, their ability to run the ball. Let's talk about the Chiefs. I'm thinking of other cold weather games you could find mm-hmm. yourself in. But one of the things that's been a dynamic shift for the Chiefs, it's not really that their offense is revved back up, but their defense suddenly is coming up with really good performances when they were extremely the other way before. Where are they finding this defense?
Well, here's what I think. One, I think that the defensive coordinators are really good defensive coordinators. Steve Spagnuolo, who kind of came up through the Jim Johnson zone blitz, you know, philosophy, and he's been around a long time, and he's a good coach. And so, and he also has had a history of having defenses that haven't played well and then got it figured out. And probably knows most notably would have been that Giants defense. I guess that first Tom Coughlin, Eli Manning Super Bowl, they were terrible at the beginning part of the season, and then they ended up being really the difference in the Super Bowl because of the way they were able to rush the passer. So I think that's been part of it. I think that, you know, Chris Jones, who signed a big contract, you know, they were trying to play him at defensive end. They moved him inside. That's been good. They've played less of Daniel Sorensen and more of Juan Thornhill. I think that's been good. And so there's been some personnel changes. There's been some position changes. There have been some, you know, probably just, you know, better play calling and adjustments. And so those things have happened. Now, the other thing that has happened over this last five is they've probably played some quarterbacks that aren't, you know, the top-tier quarterbacks. But sometimes that's what you need to do to get, you know, to get going and get in the rhythm. And so look, playing Green Bay and Jordan Love was better than playing Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers.
We're talking to Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, and we've hit a lot on the AFC, which is obviously very close together and jumbled, which has been kind of fun. But the NFC a little more defined at this point. Tampa Bay leading the NFC South at 9-3. When you watch this team, do you feel like that, you know, record aside, top to bottom, are they better than last year's team that won the Super Bowl, or do you actually think that maybe they're not, their record's just better?
I don't know that they're better. I mean, they might be the same, because I think the thing that could be better would be that the quarterback and receiver chemistry is better. The thing that stuck out to me this last weekend against Atlanta were like the number of contested catches that were made, and by a variety of players. Like, it was Gronk for a touchdown. It was Godwin on a third down play. It was Mike Evans on a critical play. And so I think that, you know, last year, Chase, it didn't feel like I was like, okay, well, what is Gronk going to give you? And what is Leonard Fournette? Like, how good is he? And I think because of last year, we have the perspective now that, like, no, you can still count on all those guys. Like, you should, like, you shouldn't write them off because of age or whatever it may be. And so now I think it's just like now we're expecting it. So I don't know that they're better, but I think you could easily say they're as good.
When you look at the NFC as a whole, obviously Arizona with the best record at 10-2, but do you think that they're the top team in the NFC, or would you maybe lean to Green Bay or Tampa?
I think I lean to Green Bay. That's why one of the reasons I thought that, like, last weekend's win for Arizona in Chicago was such a big one, because look, as we sit right now, it would have to all go through Arizona, and maybe it stays that way, but there's still plenty of football left. I mean, we're heading into week 14. So with a lot of football left, I thought that was a really important win to go into those conditions, Kyler Murray coming off of the ankle injury, to play the way they did and kind of win an ugly game. I get it. The Bears are not, Green Bay. It's not going to be the same as going into Green Bay and having to play in the postseason if that's how it shakes out. But I just thought that was a big win for them, being able to do that, because if they have to go to a place like Green Bay and play in, you know, 12-degree weather and it be sloppy and maybe a wintry mix, I kind of think that experience that they had this last weekend, you know, would be good. Now, look, it may end up going through Arizona and not being a factor, but I think with as much football as we have left, look, I don't think that it's a guarantee, obviously, that they're going to end up the one seed.
I'll ask an ACC question. What did you think about the crystal ball hire at Miami and how they handled Manny Diaz as well?
I don't, the issue with the Manny Diaz thing, that's bad business to me, especially a guy that's been around your program multiple times. Look, you knew you weren't going to keep him. There were so many guys rumored for that job. I mean, everyone from Lane Kiffin to Crystal Ball to, you know, other guys. And so, you know, maybe it's a product of the athletic director, you know, being let go prior to. And so, you know, who's making those decisions? You know, we don't know. They obviously were in the works of hiring a new athletic director. So, look, Miami's a good spot. There's so much talent in Miami. Every good program is trying to recruit that area. So what do I think of the hire? I think it's important to have somebody at Miami that knows the history of the program, that has a connection to the history of the program, that can do a good job recruiting that area, but also understanding that this isn't the Reggie Wayne, Santana Moss, Edgerrin James, Miami. This is, I don't want to say a rebuild, but it is, you're not walking in with that type of player on the roster right now. So, I do think that there needs to be some patience or some really good workings on the transfer portal.
Tim, what game intrigues you as we wrap this up? Going into week 14, what game intrigues you the most?
That would intrigue me the most?
Yeah.
Pulling them up now.
Rams-Cardinals is Monday night. Bills at the Bucks.
Yeah, that's a good one, by the way. I think Bills-Bucks would be the one that sits out to me. You know, I think we'll learn a little bit about Buffalo and their response. And I'll give you another one that I think is interesting and not even in the conference. You know, similar to that Bills-Bucks. What about San Francisco, Cincinnati?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh,
that's,
I was going to bring that one up too. Yeah,
San Francisco at 6-6, and Cincinnati at 7-5. You know, like, but that's a really big game, a really big game. And then one more. I know you only asked for one. But how about Dallas, Washington?
And Washington. At Washington.
The football team hanging around.
And they,
First of two meetings.
They've been hanging around. Yeah, right? And so, like, just kind of a tough hanging around football team playing good defense and, you know, a little concerned about some of the stumbling that, you know, that Dallas, you know, had had recently. So, yeah, a lot of – look, the NFL got this right when they stacked these division games last month of the season because the swing on these things is significant. Look, Washington wins that game, and now you're looking at an 8-5 Dallas team and a 7-6 Washington team. And, oh, by the way, right, they're playing each other again coming up. Like, that's, you know, in a bunch of other division games. Yeah.
Don't forget Ravens at the Browns, too, which if Cleveland could find a way to win that game, that makes that division interesting. Same thing.
Is it now? I mean, now, like, if these 6-6 teams pull off the upset against, you know, the division leaders, then it's going to make it real interesting. But the division leader wins that game, it'll get late fast for teams like Cleveland and Washington.
Yep. I'll start thinking about their trips, right? Where am I going to play golf, and what trip am I going to take when the season's over? You're right. But they can win. Hey, by the way, both of those teams, 6-6 teams, are at home. So we'll see if that can make a difference. Tim, appreciate the visit. As always, have a great week, and we'll do it again next week.
Sounds good. See you guys.
All right. That is Tim Hasselbeck. Good stuff from him. As always, we'll come back, continue the discussion as the Titans get ready for their big tilt against the Jags this weekend at Nissan Stadium. But first, here's a word about Lee Company.
Let's talk Lee Company. 615-567-1000 is the phone number to always keep top of mind for a lot of different conditions that could hit. As Darren mentioned right at the beginning of the show, temperatures took a huge plummet last night. You could feel it happening. And so that heater better be running properly in your home. And if it's not, hey, call Lee Company. They're ready to help you right now. 615-567-1000. And do it before you really start seeing that dip in temperatures later in December and then on in to the dead of winter. 615-567-1000. Lee Company, a proud sponsor of Nashville Predators hockey. They'll be part of the coverage tonight for our radio team as the Predators start a four-game road trip in Detroit tonight. Lee Company's got a great home maintenance plan that can not only help you with your heating right now, but also long-term with annual checkups, plus your air conditioning unit when things get warmer in the spring, plus plumbing and electric services as well. Find out about it by going to LeeCompany.com. Or remember that number, 615-567-1000. Lee Company, let their decades of expertise go to work for you.
Tomorrow night, 6 o'clock hour, right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Keep this in mind. Chase, what's going on?
I got Smashville Live tomorrow night with a fan favorite, Jordan Tutu, going to join me for the whole hour. So looking forward to that. Always good to catch up with Toots and tell some stories and everything. I talked to Jody Shelley for our Behind Enemy Lines before Columbus, and we, you know, they had some battles, so I'm sure I'll bring that up. But looking forward to it, 6 to 7. You can listen or watch on Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, all those things. And check out Smashville Live, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka.
All right. Just looking at the ratings Mark Benda put out. The Alabama-Georgia game got a 21 rating in this market. Ravens-Steelers, a 15-6. Broncos-Chiefs, 13-7. Cowboys-Saints, Thanksgiving, a 12-4. Big 12 championship, a 9-6.
That's interesting.
That was a top five.
That was a fun game, too.
Yep.
So I get
Mark Benda putting that out from News 5. So, interesting. Alabama-Georgia got a 21.
Lot of intrigue with that one.
Ravens-Steelers, 15-6. Man, those are good. Good rains. Of course, the Titans have off their back at it this week, getting ready for their tilt against the Jags. It's, you know, these games are, they're just tough, and I get it because we did the same thing in the week against the Texans, and the Texans, you know, we all know about that, and it's like you can't do that in this league, but, man, it's just hard to, you know, to try to make a case because the Jags shouldn't win this game. They have no business winning this game, but it's the NFL, and but it is still hard to try to sit here and be like, oh, be careful. Jacksonville's coming to town. Oh, don't overlook them, which is true, but, yeah, in the end, it's like, yeah, you've lost two in a row. Like, you got to beat the Jags at home. Like, they're not a good football team. They're not good.
But no.
That's, you know, that's the approach you have to – but it's just, do people really care? Do people really get excited? Do people – I don't know. I don't know what the atmosphere is going to be. I mean, is it going to be raucous at Nissan Stadium? I don't know.
Raucous? I don't know.
I would say no. Raucous may not be the – I think it'll be a good crowd. I just don't know.
Will it? That's what I'm asking.
No?
What's the weather forecast? I think this is the time of year you start seeing that. But either way, it's a massive game for the Titans to get back on the right track. They got to show after the bye week that they're rejuvenated with energy. We're going to find out in the coming days how many bodies are coming back, who's practicing. You hope that this starts the momentum going back in their favor here.
Let's go to the DDC Weather Center. On Sunday, a high of 51, mostly sunny, winds light and variable, 21% chance of rain, but not really during game time. And so I think 51, that's manageable, not bad.
I think it's fair to say it wasn't raucous for the Texans game when it was raining all day. That was
That was not fun.
There were a lot of people that either didn't go or left early or both. I guess you couldn't do both. Both categories combined, I would say. I am curious, you know, what kind of atmosphere you see, because this is, you got to protect your home turf. It's such an old adage. And in the NFL, I thought it was a great stat that Alan Bell pointed out to us, that the true home field advantage is not what it once was. It's not what it's perceived. Road teams win way more often than you might think. But, man, you talk about a game where you can set the tone. This is such an important game with that. And they may not have everybody. We still don't know if they're – is Julio Jones going to play Sunday? We still can't say for sure. We hope.
Yeah, I mean, he's just been – he can return to practice. He's still on IR, but
– David Long going to come back? Still don't know for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's –
they might be quite a bit depleted still when they take the field on Sunday.
It's like we've been saying, this bye week is needed, but it's not the magical fix-all. Like, you're still going to have guys that are hurt and banged up. And even if they do play, like, how effective can they really be? Like, if Julio Jones plays on Sunday, what is a realistic expectation for him?
It's a great question. There might be some rust. There might be some rust.
Well, we play the whole game.
You're right. Yeah. He's had two games where he hasn't finished. Out of the six games that he's played. So he's only really played start to finish in four games. Another factor that we've discussed on the show is sometimes the bye week is not an advantage for how you play. You might get bodies back, but cohesiveness is a question mark. There is some rust. We have talked about that, right? Where coming off the bye week, a team comes out and lays an egg. Does happen.
Well. I know, yeah, that does happen, but
I know Andy Reid's teams don't.
Yeah.
Which is why I took the Chiefs on Sunday, because I think his record coming out of that break was 19-3.
Yeah.
19-3 is his record. Now it's 20-3 coming off bye weeks. It's pretty darn good. Pretty darn good.
Yeah, I mean, if you're Vrabel, I mean, you're preaching that of, hey, we got a week off, we got a mental break, but we got to take care of business because, you know, you moved up to the second seed in the AFC, but, you know, Indy won. So Indy gained on you because you were off. So you still have the tiebreaker, obviously, but you gotta do your thing. And this is the team you should beat. I know, Willie. You don't like that, but
well, this is hard for me to argue here. Yeah. This is one.
Yeah,
you do need to win. What is the line? That's a good question. That's what question. I usually turn to when actually, you say they looked. Should beat, because you have
Titans,
said they should beat.
What do you
beat.
Think it is? Titans by what?
Because I'm going to use a point of reference. The Titans were favored by one at Indy, and Chase said that they should win.
6.5.
6.5 is a little bit more you should win.
What do you think it is? It's not the line. He's guessing.
Yeah, I'm guessing.
I'll say 7.5.
9.
Okay.
After I guessed, I just looked. It's 8.5 on BetMGM. So, 8.5, 9, somewhere in there. Are you saying DraftKings has it at 9?
No, that's not where I was looking.
Okay.
Okay, so we get the picture, though.
Yeah.
They're a sizable favorite playing at home, coming off a bye week. But we have seen them learn their lesson in the past with the Texans and the Jets. If you don't play well, you can get beat by anybody.
8.5 on – or no, that's – sorry. That's BetMGM, what you just said. Good Lord. I think it's going to be 8.5. I think at DraftKings as well. But I suspect it's – no, wow. DraftKings is 9.5.
Really?
9.5 at DraftKings.
Wow. Yeah, I just pulled up Vegas Insider, and it is kind of all over the place. You have BetMGM at 8.5, Caesars at 9, WynnBET at 9.5, FanDuel at 8.5, PointsBet at 9.5.
Wait till the injury reports. If they start getting bodies back, it'll climb. It'll go up over double. It'll go double digits
for sure.
If they get bodies back, and this is a big week because the Colts are on a bye. Right, and you've got some key teams. You've got three AFC teams that could be vying for spots. Well, not could, will be. Patriots, Colts, and the Dolphins just keep winning. No, by the way.
Yeah,
we discussed this yesterday in our vaunted NFL zingers. The Dolphins are 6-7. They've won 5 in a row, and their next two games are the Jets and then the Saints. The Saints are really banged up. They could come into Nashville at 8-7. Would anybody? I mean, they should come in. There's that word, should.
There it is.
They should come in 8-7.
Did you notice the total? That the total opened, again, I'm looking at Vegas Insider, it opened at 50, and now most places have it at 43.5 or 44.
It opened at 50?
Yep.
For the Titans-Jags?
Yeah.
Wow.
Opened it. The line was 9.5, and then the total was 50. Now it's down in the low 40s.
That means they recognized pretty quickly by probably some sharp money that they had oopsed that over-under. They're like, whoa. Oops. Too high. Got to get that way down. Yeah, I don't know. It's a game you've got to have to be 9-4. I do wonder what the crowd's going to be. They need the crowd behind them. They need to take advantage of that. These home games. And I don't know. I don't know what the crowd's going to be. They need to show up, but I don't know if they will.
It's a really good question, because this team, even though they're banged up, I mean, they're in a very good position. So you would think that people are going to want to go support them, but you're right. I mean, it's just they're fickle, and it's Jacksonville, and that's not all that exciting.
Nope.
So, you know, this could fall into the category of, you know, I can't give my tickets away.
Could be. Why do we think that the home records haven't been as good? You brought up the Alan Bell stat, who joined us on Friday's show. It's not as overwhelming as one would think.
Yeah.
So why?
I think it's been building for a long time now. I think it's happened gradually over, you know, a couple of decades. I just think professionals seem to handle the environment better. They're not as intimidated by the crowd, and I also think there's less places. Like, ESPN showed some really good, you know what it was? It was NBC. They showed great footage from Arrowhead back in the day, back when there were teams had not learned how to communicate as well to the offensive line to get snap counts, the silent counts, all that stuff. And remember, quarterbacks used to back away from the huddle and say, "I can't hear." And the referee would have to say, and this is what they showed on NBC, "Can you please quiet down so the other team can get the snap count?" Like, you could you could call for sort of a pause until the crowd calmed down. And some of those old places like the King Dome and other indoor places could really rock. And it would disrupt the road team. There's a lot less of that now. Teams just cope with it better. That's my theory anyway. I have no evidence to base that on. But I think that's part of it. The other thing that is hard to overlook is I have to believe that the trend of taking the weekend trip to see your team play on the road is much more in the works than it used to be.
Well, and I think, too, like if you're looking at it from just a cost standpoint, rather than spending money on a season ticket, which is very, very expensive. I mean, to go to an NFL game in general is just expensive.
It's crazy. Yep.
Parking, food, everything. Mm-hmm. You would rather take that money and, like you just said, make it a weekend trip, go to someplace cool, and go see your team play there.
These are all theories that I cannot
No, but I think there's something – there's totally something to it. And the NFL is not going to do anything about it because they're the NFL, and they're like, hey, we're the NFL. We're still printing money. But because their money's made on the TV deals. I mean, that's what they care about. So but – that's, I think it's interesting. You know, I just home field just doesn't matter anymore.
I think there's two factors. I think that was a really good point about, and you think about, so you've got Vegas in the mix now, so you've got some destination places, right, where people would love to look
Nashville.
At their favorite team. Well, we know that. Nashville, but I'm saying now we've got Vegas and L.A. with their new stadium.
Oh, man, yeah.
So you've got these new spots that are great places for visiting fans to go, hey, that's a game I'm circling, and I'm gonna pick a road game, and I'm going there.
And tickets are gettable.
Absolutely.
Like, it's a little harder to do that in Green Bay.
Vegas are pretty tough to get tickets right now.
Even for there's not travel packages and stuff. I would imagine.
Just because it's new, and this is actually even the last year was the first year. This is the first year that you actually go.
I would have thought they're gettable.
I've watched two Vegas games that come to mind, and there were absolutely flooded with visiting fans in there. So it's not that hard. They're getting in. I've seen two really.
Well, how much? Yeah, I mean, it depends on how much you want to pay, and I don't know what the price would be. But
well, that's what I'm getting. You go on the road, the fans, we've it's proven. Why do you think we talk about this subject so much here? The Titans fans sell because they're like, how do I say no? They're offering me double, triple my ticket price.
More.
They don't care.
Because
about
you've
the
committed.
Price.
You're committing to go.
Yes.
So you got to just pay what you ever have to pay, even if you have to pay more. You're going.
Yep.
And you're on vacation.
Right. you're taking a trip. So those markets like Nashville and Vegas and L.A., when they circle that and they say, I'm going, they don't care. They know they're going to spend. Nothing is going to scare them away, and they're getting in to these places. I mean, how many times have we talked about Chargers home games that don't sound like Chargers home games in L.A.? I've seen a couple Raiders games this year that got taken over by the visiting fans, and we know we've had our fair share of those talks here in this market as well. I think the other thing that's interesting is I think because of the rules, you know, teams that, you know, had a certain standard, a physical standard that could set a tone at home are really unable to do that in today's game. I think that may play a factor in it because there were Titans teams in the past and Ravens teams with really, really, really nasty defenses that could set a tone at home, and I don't think they're able to do that like they were able to do, you know, in the old system where now it's about offense and the defenses are always going up against it. Everything is slanted against defense, and you could set a real tone at home with your defense on what you could do, what you could get away with, and I just don't think you have that advantage anymore in today's game.
Got a quick stat. Somebody listening passed this along. The record of teams coming off of a bye this year is, guess, there have been 24 This is unofficial, but I believe this is the correct number. Winning record, losing record?
Winning record.
Winning. 24 games, I'll go
I'll go winning.
14 and 10. You said 24, 14 and 10.
Chase, any guess? Better or worse than that?
13 and 11.
Very close. 12, 11, and 1. So it's pretty much 500 coming off of a bye. So it's certainly not, but based on that, a huge advantage. Of course, we don't know who's playing who, the schedule strength. But also, good track record for Vrabel off of byes. Last three times coming off of a bye, beat Buffalo 42-16. That was, quote, an unscheduled bye. Remember that was the COVID thing last year.
Yep.
Beat Jacksonville 42-20. Beat Dallas 28-14 the year before that.
We'll come back, wrap up the third hour. Don't forget to start the 1 o'clock hour. We'll talk a little college football with Mitch Light. You're listening to the DDC here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I saw, unfortunately, that Percy Miller has entered the transfer portal. I saw the stadium put that out there on Twitter. That's where I saw it. I know it's
I saw it floating around last night, and then I guess it was official today.
He, of course, is the son of Master P. We had them both on the show when they committed to TSU. He played in 1, 2, 3 games for the Tigers, and he gone. He averaged 3 points. Remember, he's the kid who signed a $2 million NIL deal with Web Apps America. Boy. Somebody's going to eventually write the article. NIL deals gone wrong. Did they really get their money's worth? Because you know there's a whole lot of those out there. $2 million sure. NIL deal.
He's but if already, you're
already transferring from TSU.
If you're a kid right now and you know that there's no regulations on it and it's new and they're just handing out money, then hell yeah, jump on it. I don't blame you at all.
Well, nobody's blaming the kid. I'm saying how many companies have spent bad money.
Right. But
I getting
mean,
bang for their buck.
Okay. I mean, like, if they don't know that, like, if they don't realize that, you know, what they're doing and the money that they're spending, you know, paying, was it Bryce Young got $1 million before he played a game or played a meaningful game? Like, okay.
At least that one's going to pay off.
Sure.
At least you would think.
I will say.
He's going to be the Heisman Trophy winner.
I don't know anything about what's happened behind the scenes. I'm looking at the stats. According to the stats I'm looking at, he has played in 6 games, 61 minutes. He's 3 for 14 from the field. He is 0 for 4 from 3, 6 for 8 from the free throw line. So he has struggled.
Were you counting some preseason games? Because that's the tweet I saw from the stadium said he played in 3 games, averaged 11 minutes per game.
Well, I'm just reading the team stats. They're 1-6. So he's played in – their only win is against Fisk. So they've struggled as a team. Whether he's played 3 or 6, I think we know he's struggled when he's been in there. He's turned the ball over some. I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. I'm sure there's quite a story there for him to pull the plug this early and not give it a little bit more time. But I will say this. I do wonder, when the NIL is such a big part of whatever you do, does it distract you from being the player that you want to be? I don't know if that's happened here or not, but I have wondered that. And I'm sure you can come back at me and say, well, what about this guy, Willie? He's had a good – Bryce Young is one, right? Before he ever threw a pass, he was guaranteed a certain amount of money, $1 million or whatever. He might be the Heisman Trophy winner. But I do think that everybody's human, and sometimes I think you can get caught up with that rather than every day at practice. Am I getting better? If I don't start day one, is my NIL – are my NIL people going to be disappointed, and how does that affect me when I go into the game? Am I worried I got to do too much? Is that distracting me from playing my best? I do think there's going to be some people that get caught up in that. Some. I don't know whether that happened here or not. But we wish him well. I hope this works out for him, but this is an awfully early, what strikes me is kind of a knee-jerk thing. I mean, you're not going to give it one season?
No, because
you bolt before Christmas? I get it. Does happen.
They're not patient anymore. Give it to me now.
Well, in fairness, we don't have any clue what's going on. So we're just out there just throwing.
Absolutely zero.
I mean, we love Penny Collins and
yeah.
And we're giving him, but I mean, we don't have any idea what's going on. And look, this is the reality. And I don't envy coaches for this, but look, they get paid well to do it. Because I see this even in the small little fishbowl that I'm in the travel ball world. Some of these really, really talented kids, I hear the stories because, you know, we've flirted with them. But what you get on the parent side of things is a whole new bag of tricks.
Yeah.
It's a whole big bag of headache is what it is. And sure, is it intriguing? Is it interesting to have one of these really talented kids? Absolutely. But you know what? It comes with a price. And like I said, I don't feel sorry for these coaches. They get paid well to deal with that. I'm just a volunteer coach, man. I don't get paid well to deal with that. But I see it, and that's just little tiny travel ball world, right? 9 and 10-year-olds. Can you imagine at that level? Can you imagine what they deal with? With these kids and these parents, and why are you playing my? I could only imagine the stories that we could, you know, the stories that could be told that coaches deal with. And I'm sure it's outrageous.
Now,
but I have no idea what's going on with this. No clue.
100%. But I will tell you that we know Penny Collins pretty well.
Yep.
And Penny Collins is smart enough to play the people that earn the playing time. So I don't think it's easy for a coach when a guy comes in with this huge, hey, look at this NIL thing that I'm bringing. But if he legitimately hasn't earned the minutes, the coach has to play the players he thinks are going to give him the best chance of winning. I don't think he's intentionally holding back Hersey Miller. I think you're trying to coach a guy to be the best player he can be, and you're trying to win games. They haven't won a lot since he's been there. He can't set everything aside. But I think sometimes you come in with this – I don't know the circumstances, but I would think Hersey Miller probably thought he could go to Tennessee State, start from day one.
Yeah, and, you know, here's the other part of it, what you were just saying, Darren. I mean, his circumstances are also very unique. His father is, you know, a rapper.
Extremely
and his head
wealthy and yeah. successful.
Yeah, and so it's not just the parents, there's people. Like, there's the circle.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, prime example, we had him on the show. Because we had his dad on the show. I mean, his dad was on the show and Hersey Miller was on the show.
And Penny Collins was on at the same time. We had them all on.
Yeah, I mean, there's stuff that comes with that. And like you said, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes at all. But, I mean, I'm sure that this is more than just, you know, the kid making a decision. So that's just kind of the thing that comes with it. It in these levels, you're the level that you're at with baseball and travel ball, I mean, parents and the people, the circle, you know, they make decisions.
How many times, and I know, right, it's the adult, but how many times have I said, man, if these parents would just get out of their kids' way?
Yep.
Because, I mean, I see so many really talented kids that they're hopping from team to team or they jump on a team that's not doing anything, like they're not playing any. It's like because the parents they don't know what they're doing. They this whole fascination with playing up at this age, ridiculous. These parents don't have a clue what they're doing. They're just out there. I don't know. They get one person in their ear and they make a decision. They don't have a clue what they're doing. But the point is, like that goes on at every level. Like that's every age group, every level, and I can only imagine at this level that we're talking about how bad it can be, even though we don't have a clue what the circumstances are behind this. Like you said, Willie, we know Brian Collins. We know Penny really, really well, but I don't know why this is happening, but, yep, he's gone. He's in the transfer portal, just like thousands of other kids. Remember, who was it that came on and told us transfer portal? Was it Dubin? It was over 2,000 kids?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was Dubin.
Jeez.
I think that was just for football.
That was just football, yeah. crazy. All right, we'll come back. Speaking of football, we'll talk a little college football to begin the final hour. That's next.